Hey everyone, Brian from All Day Rock Off here, and today's interview is with Stoney and Chris, two GORUCK Selection finishers. This interview touches a little bit on GORUCK Selection, but it focuses mostly on this recent event that they took part in together. They were on a team for the Sniper Adventure Challenge, which is a long 36 plus hour event that involves just a lot of navigation, orienteering, miles, and believe it or not, based on the title of the event, some shooting. In this interview, we don't dive too much into the shooting aspect of it, but we focus a lot more on how they came together as a team, how much time they had to train together, things that they focused on, things that they look for when they're choosing team members, the mindset that you have to have to complete an event like this or like GORUCK Selection. And I think this turned into just an awesome, awesome interview. That's a long way of saying if firearms aren't your thing, don't worry. I think that you're still going to get a lot out of this interview because the majority of the time is spent on the teamwork aspects. I wasn't sure if I should break the news in the intro or not, but we get into it pretty quick in the interview, so I'll say it here. Stoney and Chris did take first place at this event. There's a link in the show notes to the website for the Sniper Adventure Challenge, which includes the scorecard showing them in first place. It's pretty rad. This is Chris's third year doing it. It's the first time he's taken first place, and we talk about that as well. I can't wait to get into the interview. You're listening to the All Day Rock Off podcast, episode number 122. Thank you so much for downloading this episode. Thank you so much for all the support. I really think that you're going to enjoy this call between Stoney and Chris, two GORUCK Selection finishers, about the Sniper Adventure Challenge. And with all that out of the way, here's the interview. Today, I'm talking with Stoney and Chris, two GORUCK Selection finishers, about a recent event that they just took part in, the 2019 Sniper Adventure Challenge. Really excited to have these two guys on the call with me. Chris, Stoney, how are you guys doing today?
I'm good so far.
Yeah, doing well here.
Glad to hear it. We're still in the morning, so I'm glad that no one's day has took a turn yet.
Yeah, lots can go wrong yet.
So, I mean, the Sniper Adventure Challenge, it's got the word sniper in the title, the word adventure in the title. So I'm guessing that this is a distance event that involves some shooting. Does one of you want to give an overview of what this event is and kind of the, you know, what it entails?
That's a Chris answer for sure.
Sure. The Sniper Adventure Challenge is kind of dubbed an adventure race with guns. And I think that's a little more suitable than just the name itself, because the word sniper makes people's imaginations go crazy. And, you know, wearing ghillie suits and crawling around. We don't do a whole lot of that, but it's a race that takes place somewhere in the Midwest. The last few years, it's been in Wyoming, and it lasts 36 to 48 hours. And a major theme is land navigation and shooting and thinking on your feet. I was introduced to it when I worked at GORUCK by another cadre who thought that I would be a good partner. And once I was introduced, I've been hooked, and this is the third time that I've run it.
That's exciting. How did you perform the previous two times?
I've got a second place and a third place, but with Stoney, this was obviously better with the first place.
Sounds like it. Congratulations again to you too.
Thanks. I think we were kind of the perfect team.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you for the invite.
So speaking of the teams, this is a two-person team event. I'm guessing that it's kind of tough to find a teammate for this, because this isn't like finding a teammate for something small like a 5K or a 10K or, you know, a shorter event. This is a 36 to 48 hour, 30 to 60 plus mile event that not only involves a lot of land navigation, but also firearms. So who reached out to who, and how did this team process come together?
I reached out to Stoney by a turn of events. I needed a partner on fairly short notice, and I feel like I'm capitalizing the conversation here, but hopefully I'm building a platform for Stoney. It was about 2 weeks before the event, and Stoney and I had never done an event together, although I had been in Florida at a selection he was at, and I knew he'd been doing firearms days, and I had seen I had been at Navigators, and I knew that Sarah and Stoney had been doing the tactical games, as well as another race that some selection finishers have been doing the last few years called the Endeavor Team Challenge. And I know that Stoney and Sarah went and crushed that. So it wasn't really a far stretch, because I figured that he had all the skill sets and personality and mindset and everything that needed to go into it. So preparation wasn't a big deal. Mostly it was just hoping, crossing my fingers, that the schedule would open up. He'd be able to fly Colorado, you know, with basically 2 weeks notice and jump into this thing.
Yeah, and on my end, I was like, oh, hey, Sarah, guess what? Chris gave me a call to do this thing called the Sniper Adventure Challenge. I'm like, I don't even know how to sniper. I don't have to do anything. I haven't shot anything over 250 yards before. So I'm like, I can ruck and I can suffer. I can do this. So we'll figure it out. Chris said, you know, get down here as early as you can. We'll do as much shooting and whatnot. So that gave me a little bit of confidence in dealing with that end of it. Plus, I'm already familiar with all the FADs and stuff we've done in the States with GORUCK, with shooting ARs and stuff. So, and I don't know, I had a little bit of skill, a little bit of knowledge, which could also be dangerous under my belt. So I thought, oh, no, I mean, do this.
So was this the first time that you two met each other in person, Stoney, or is this the...
No.
Okay, so you have met each other before this. This is just the first event that you two have done together.
Yeah, yeah. The good thing about the selection standard, if you will, is that, you know, any one of the finishers can meet up and do an event, and we're all pretty much of the same ilk. So, you know, although I've never even met some of the people, we know we have the same physical abilities, if you will, right? So, you know, having a partner who's also done a selection is brilliant in my eyes. Because then you're not even worried about that part of it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it takes a special kind of person to sign up for GORUCK selection, and it takes probably an even more special type of person to finish GORUCK selection. So having, you know, that camaraderie and that under both your belts is probably a great foundation for building everything else off of, because you know that the other person is going to be dedicated and 100% in it to win it.
And even in the worst moment, it can't suck as much as selection did.
Right.
So Stoney, Chris reaches out to you 2 weeks before the event. You've never done any snipe, you know, shooting at greater than 250 yards. You know, what was the first thing that went through your head when he reached out asking you to be on his team?
I leave a lot of stuff to the universe. And this is one of those calls, and the universe gave me a call. I'm like, hey, you got time to extend your reach here a little bit. Let's push your boundaries. So I was like, oh, I got the time too. I don't have anything slated. I guess I'm going to Colorado, honey. So, and that was it. So I looked at it as a challenge, and, you know, I can handle the AR okay, but I haven't really shot much distance. So, but, part of this adventure is two guns, a one bolt gun, one AR platform. So I was really hoping I got to use the AR platform, but I didn't know anything about the bolt gun. And, so I was savvy in the world of that. So now it's just, you know, figuring it out as you go. We had lots of time between checkpoints to talk about it.
Yeah, I can imagine that there's a, you know, a decent amount of time to discuss the previous shots and technique while you're traveling that 30 to 60 plus miles on foot.
It's a game, right? You just got to read the rules and do the game.
So Chris called you 2 weeks before the event. When did you end up flying out? Did you give yourself some time to practice or, you know, do some training with Chris in advance?
Yeah, the only training I get for this sort of distance is down in the States. Up in Canada, we don't have I don't have access to a range, anything over like 200, you know, maybe yards. And shooting distance up here is quite another thing, right? So I flew down maybe a day and a bit, landed at 5:30 in the evening, slept that night, got to the range, shot a couple rounds. Then we headed out to the desert the next day. And I think that was public land, Chris, where we were shooting that first day.
Which
part of America that totally blows me away, that I'm totally amazed with, is that, we'll just go shoot over here. I'm like, what do you mean to go shoot over there? Like, it's not a range. Someone out in the open. Let's go shooting. Like, oh my God, this is awesome. So another reason to move down there.
Yeah, for people that don't know, Stoney's Canadian, and that posed a little bit of an issue also, just with the differences in how firearms are regulated and traveling. So he came and I said, don't worry, you know, I got both platforms, you know, we'll just familiarize you with them. And fortunately, you know, Stoney, you know, to me qualifies as an expert with an AR. So it was very easy there. Show him some of the differences between the way he'd been shooting and the way we're going to shoot on the event. And he picked it up, you know, essentially right away. We were off.
Yeah, the main difference that I noticed is that the distance shooting ARs are considerably heavier than the close quarter combat ARs that I'm using.
Yeah, that is true. And the reason that most rifles that people are shooting long distance are heavier is to manage the recoil and wobble a little bit less. So even light field rifles are much lighter than the ARs that you're going to swing around and run with. But and the funny thing is, you know, our systems were pretty light for what they were, but still relatively functional. I kind of unknowingly I made our rifles I made them a little heavier so that we would have a better chance at scoring high in the shooting, knowing that we could lug around a little bit of extra weight. And I think it played in favor because I believe we got the high score for the shooting stages as well.
Sweet. I didn't know that. Well, Chris had the system pretty much nailed with the tripod and the weapons and the systems and the dialing of the mills and the whatnot with the whatnots. And that was just kind of along for the ride. I was literally point, shoot, point, shoot, point, shoot, go, 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 go. And then whether I was shooting first or Chris was shooting first, the status to me seemed extremely fast. You know, 90 seconds to get 10 shots off. And Chris had to reach out to like 1,300 yards at some point. And I think mine were all under 850, I think was the farthest, maybe. I don't even know now, I forget.
I think you'd hit just over 1,000. On one of them, like you walked them out, just over 1,000. Yeah,
good. There you go.
Like 980, and then like 1050 or something like that. But you never know. So that's the cool thing about some of these events, and in general, what attracts me to a lot of the like Endeavor Team Challenge and Sniper Adventure Challenge, and some of the other things that people, a lot of selection finishers and people with interests like this are doing, is that you don't really know what's coming. So you can prepare with general skill sets, but that's the best that you can do because you don't know exactly what's coming. So your best bet is to be a generalist. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and I say that kind of loosely because you got to be good at a lot of things in general.
You got to be generally awesome at everything.
Well, to be competitive, to go and have fun and finish, you know, and some of these things like, you know, you get finisher or just completing it or being able to be out there for the full allotted time is kind of a mark of pride for the team. So not only are you competing, but, you know, I think that the 20 something teams that made it until the end, they were all proud of themselves just simply for doing that, because it means that you're able to do a lot of stuff pretty well. And, you know, I knew that Stoney has a massive arsenal of skill sets, and some of those are complete opposite of my skill set, so we're kind of a perfect pair in that regard. And then you just, right, just like you mentioned, you know, you got to be able to like put your nose down, lean forward, and you know, kind of start accept that, that some of it means putting in some hard work, and then when you need to, you know, you turn your mind back on and plug along.
That's what I enjoy after selection, for sure. It's just maintaining that standard of, you know, being able to jump in any situation and get out there. So I generally don't like to do the same event twice, because I like the newness or the challenge of doing something different. So I don't know what we'll do next, but it can't be the same event.
Well, especially now that you guys both took first together.
Well, yeah, we're technically retired, right? So we can't think of beat.
So I think I got a good feel, Stoney, on your, you know, firearms experience going into this. Chris, do you want to talk about, you know, your history with firearms and kind of your level set going into the 2019 Sniper Adventure Challenge?
Sure. I've been spending the last few years competing nationally at a variety of shooting, and I've focused on some of my weaknesses the last year. So I really did go into this, you know, knowing that I was capable of shooting at a level that would win. And so that's largely just because I've been essentially shooting full time for the last year and a half and competing at all sorts of competitions. As well as trying to maintain, you know, my climbing and my fitness for race type events like this. But at least amongst the community that does these events, the Sniper Adventure Challenge is considered, you know, the hardest, biggest event of the type. So like the GoRuck world, a lot of people's goal is to pass selection. In the shooting world, a lot of people's goal is to finish or do well at the Sniper Adventure Challenge. So and I'm one of those people that picks events, sets a standard, and wants to achieve that standard. It was definitely on the list and high. You know, I was probably a little bit of a pain. It's definitely like, all right, you know, I want to go, but I also want to go and do our very best. And fortunately, you know, that's how Stoney presents himself at events, no matter what. So he wasn't necessarily thinking about winning, having never been there, but I knew he was going to work as hard as he could, as best he could, mm-hmm. no matter what. And he definitely did it, you know, and
that's part of the team, right? I don't want to let the team down. And you don't want to let the team down. None of us want to let the team down. You got to keep going.
Yeah. And it was cool because we were able to kind of watch each other and you know, I think two things stand out. You know, they always have kind of a separator event because there's a lot of people there and a lot of teams. And so if they just said go, then everybody would be kind of kicking everyone's heels. So they have certain types of separators. And this happened to just be kind of hustle and shoot. And oftentimes you get more time, but this time to make the shooting harder, they made the time hack 90 seconds. So you had to do a lot of pretty complex shooting in a very short time for two people. So without discussing it, like Stoney mentioned, you know, he would get his rifle on target and I would dial his turrets for him to speed things up, you know. And then other things, you kind of get on autopilot. And I remember one kind of screw up that I made. You know, I'm good at land navigation. I think Stoney's good at land navigation. We're out there and we're kind of hustling, but you could see landmarks, and you can kind of see this landmark in the distance, and you can jump in and kind of redirect this in a minute. But when we were walking to this, they call it Alkaline Lake, essentially just a dried up little pond. And it was probably an hour before sunset, but it was several miles away. You could see it off in the distance, though. So we're walking and we're talking, and Stoney goes, man, should we shoot an azimuth or get a reference? I'm like, no, man, we can see it. Like, we're just walking right at it. So we're talking. He's like, are you sure? We should probably get a landmark and shoot an azimuth. Like, you know, feeling kind of cocky and like we're hustling and we're talking. And then storm rolled in and sun went down, and now it's pitch black, and we didn't have an azimuth or a reference. And like, oh shit, now walking at this lake that we could see, you know, clear as day when it was day, but now it's, you know, pitch black, no moon, it's cloudy. Oh shit. So we walked in the general area, general direction, but you know, we walked just to the north of it, and you know, we probably lost an hour, and I'm thinking, fuck, But I just like said, you know what? You're right, Stoney. You just never know when something's going to kind of throw a wrench into your plan. And
I was also amazed at how black it got out there. Like once the sun went down and the moon didn't come up, I'm like, oh, it's gone. Everything's gone.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and during the day, it's as clear as like a neon sign saying, you know, it's right here, but it's miles away, and now pitch black with no reference. You know, so I thought that was pretty funny. And then after that, I think there was no like, hey, I think we should do this. Anytime anybody said something, it was like, roger that. Like, check. Like, and, you know, sometimes you need to screw up once to realize, fuck, man, we can't be cocky about this. You know, so we probably lost an hour just because we walked to the north of it, realized we'd missed it. Then we had to do some resection to figure out exactly where we were, shot an azimuth, and we essentially just walked straight up onto it. But it would have saved us an hour had we just done that. So I think that's a good lesson for everybody. Like, man, make sure you've got those backups and listen to your fucking partner.
Then we would enter. It's a lake, right? Like, it's a lake. It's the lowest part. It's a lake. We're going to find this lake. No, walk right past the lake.
Yeah. And just and not realizing that, oh shit, like between here and there's gonna be a storm, it's gonna get pitch black, and all of a sudden, you know, you're not walking right at this obvious blaring thing, and it was really, really dark. I think that surprised me more than anything is just how dark it was and that you just couldn't see anything.
Even at some points, we were trying to use stars as azimuths because it's the only thing you could see. It's just flat, open, roaming plain. It's no real landmarks other than the shadow of a mountain in the distance or a star.
Yeah, but that was good, you know. And then we kind of got back on track and then hustled back out.
Yeah,
it was. I mean, I think it. You know, it. Not to jump too far ahead, but I think that the type of people that were attracted to selection are also the type of people that are trying to push themselves and experience a little bit of adventure. And there's never a good time to really jump into adventure. You just kind of have to do it. So, you know, that's why reaching out to Stoney, I was like, gosh, you know, there are a lot of people who are fit and there are a lot of people who have skills. The people that take that fitness and take their skill sets and apply them in a variety of situations where it's not just canned, that's hard to find. And people like that are much rarer amongst, you know, the community of folks. And so, and it, at some point, you know, it's a decision you make on how you want to live your life. But once you've made that decision, you know, it's very, you know, it's very clear. You can only train so much for adventure and for the unknown because you don't really know what you're training for. And I spent some time recently thinking about, you know, what's the key. And to me, it's adventure. And you guys might see it another way, but you can only have so much fitness and you can only have so much skills before you kind of have to just throw yourself into it and apply yourself, right?
That's where you prove yourself, though, right? You can be fit, you can be mentally learned, you can think on your feet, but unless you throw yourself into that mix, where you're putting everything together, you know, that's where I like the test or the proving grounds of it, but in the adventure aspect of it.
Yeah, exactly. But over the years, you know, I've watched Stoney, you know, go to Nicaragua and race up a volcano through the jungle. I've seen him do the tactical games, and you know Stoney's been shooting a lot. But when you haven't just jumped into a competition, you really don't know what you're going to go up against until you just sign up and go. And he jumped into the tactical games, which for that type of shooting is kind of the ultimate competition right now.
And there's nothing up here where I am that does that. So the only way to do that is stateside, right? So I can't even train for that up here.
But my guess is if we posted somewhere online or we called a bunch of people and said, hey, you know, I know you've been shooting and you've been doing, you know, whatever for exercise. What do you think about going to this? And they'll say, well, yeah, well, maybe I'll exercise some more. And I'll probably want to shoot and train and take some classes. And that's a huge difference between somebody like Stoney or Paige or some other, you know, finishers that have been doing stuff like that. And, you know, or Mark, who's been skydiving like crazy. It's like, well, you know, you kind of just have to start doing it. And that's part of what makes it so rewarding. You know, if you know exactly what's coming, it's not an adventure, right? It's just a test. You know, if I say, well, you know, if you're going to do X, Y, Z in this canned format, you know, certainly those types of things can be hard. And certainly those kinds of things can be challenging, but it's definitely not adventure, because inherent in that is certain mystery, right? And I think that's cool. That's what's cool about the types of shooting events that this outfit runs, Competition Dynamics. So you kind of don't know what's coming, so you have to just show up. And by doing that, you kind of get the general idea of where you're at, and if you want to improve, the kinds of things that you could do to improve. But, you know, the next time you come, it's going to be different. And although I've done the Sniper Adventure Challenge now 3 times, it's been completely different each time. And I think that's really neat.
Even though I was trying to bone up a little bit watching YouTube and the different events of the Sniper Challenge in years past, I mean, I've seen some CQB stuff where they have to do like a hostage rescue thing. I don't know what that was all about. I'm like, I don't even know what to train for. Right? So then I came across another video of a guy had to administer his own IV. I'm like, oh my God. I mean, is there a top possibility that I'm going to have to administer my own IV in the middle of this? So I was like, oh geez, I have no idea what to expect, right? But just got to roll with it. Who knows what was going to be presented.
Yeah.
But fortunately, Chris is a great coach.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like get a good coach with you out there. And I mean, I think that's kind of similar to if you just start searching around, reading AARs about any of the GORAC events or, you know, anything like that, you just get a million different types of scenarios and you're just presented with a couple of them at the events. I think that's one of the things that, you know, draws our community back time and time again to events. And it sounds like it's one of the things, Chris, that has drawn you back to the Sniper Adventure Challenge 3 years in a row.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that if you're not growing your skills and you're not training, you know, towards, you know, in a direction that you think is important for you, whatever it is, and then finding ways to test it, then, you know, it's just kind of silly, right? But that's just the way I like to carry myself and the friends that I keep, the company I keep, and the things that are important to me are, you know, developing skill sets that I think are important that could be handy in a way that's general enough that you can apply them in a variety of contexts. And, you know, I like to feel like, gosh, if I needed to climb up something, I could climb up it. You know, if I needed to carry somebody, I could carry them. If I needed to, you know, do whatever, I could go do it. But I think a big separator is just simply the willingness to go do those things. And that's something that is a rare quality in people. So it's good to find folks like that and then keep them on your contact list.
Agreed. I have a pile of friends up here in Canada that, you know, think, oh, those things are great. You do all those really cool things. I'm like, you just got to come out and do them. You're just there. Come on out. You don't need a special skill. You just need to show up and figure it out as you get there, you know?
Yeah, it's so true.
And there are a lot of small events, you know, but they're little kind of niche things and they're hard to find. It's hard to find a source for things that you can do like this. I mean, certainly you could just come up with your own, but it's also nice to meet people that do things like this and measure yourself against them and meet like-minded folks. And I think doing this, you meet a lot of cool like-minded folks. And I met a lot of people working for GORAC, but also just amongst the selection finishers. I think those are the kinds of folks that tend to see things in a similar way. Not that we all have the same interests, because I think our interests hardly overlap at all. But the common factor is, you know, I want to develop a skill, and then I want to go prove myself with people at the highest level to not only measure myself, but learn from people who are actually out doing it instead of people who just kind of talk about it. And I think, you know, that,
yeah,
again, like, that's not something that everybody wants to do, but I think that that's it's a cool thing once you kind of just bite off the acceptance of, you know, I'm never going to be fully prepared for this, so let's just jump into it head first. And that's how I got into shooting, was when I was asked to be a partner, you know, like Stoney. I thought, gosh, you know, I can shoot, but those distances, I don't know anything about it. So it's nice to say, you know, I've done it 3 times now, but if you know, in terms of calendar, that's 2 years. In the last 2 years, I've gone from, you know, not a good shooter to feeling pretty comfortable that, you know, with a long gun, I can hold my own against, you know, any human.
Feeling pretty comfortable. I mean, you only took first place. That's all. Just relatively comfortable, right?
Yeah. But check this out. So, I'm a softlete athlete. So I kind of have my finger on the pulse of softlete, and I don't know exactly how it came about, but there are these like mini bikes, these, not bikes, but motorcycles. What do you call them?
Monkey bikes.
They're just little monkey bikes. Yeah. They kind of look like circus motorcycles or something. But anyway, so this group from softlete, which Stoney was a part of, decided they were going to ride these monkey bikes across Romania. And for those of you who don't know, geographically, Romania's got a lot of mountains. And so you're riding these little freaking tiny little motorcycles, and you can't go that fast, right? That like
tops, 30 miles like 30 mile an hour. Top 10, wide open.
And Stoney's kind of a genius with machines and highly skilled at you know, mechanical stuff, in addition to being, you know, a stunt man and an amazing athlete. Stoney's like riding these little motorcycles through the mountains. And to me, if that doesn't seem like an adventure, then like we don't speak the same language, because
I was just going to say, like, the adventure for me wasn't even in the riding across the mountains. It was slow. It was, you know, it was kind of, the scenery was awesome, but I was like, the adventure starts when the bikes break down. Like, when are the bikes going to break down? And then you get to really sink your teeth into the adventure and the challenge aspect of it.
Because my mind didn't even go to the bikes breaking down. I was thinking, trying to just fathom biking across, and then, oh yeah, I guess a bike could break, and then you have to fix it.
That's part of the challenge with this, with the monkey bike adventurous. The Chinese bike made bikes, right? But half the adventure isn't in the journey. Half the adventure is in when they break down and what you need to do in timing the snake and dealing with the locals where they've never even seen this bike on how to fix the bike, or how to get parts for the bike where they haven't been manufactured, or what do you do to solve the situation, you know, which is going to happen. And how you deal with it is the challenge, right?
And it's interesting because I think it takes, you know, a special kind of person to sign up for the Sniper Adventure Challenge. It definitely takes a special kind of person to sign up for GORC Selection. And it takes a very special kind of person to put themselves in that kind of a situation where you know something's going to go wrong and you're going to have to fix it in non-ideal circumstances.
Yeah. Well, to me, that's the common thread. Is you put yourself in a situation where you know, it sounds exciting, obviously, you know, there has to be kind of the bait, right, of adventure and like, gosh, I've never been to Romania. I've never ridden a circus bike. let's do it together.
I've never been to Wyoming. I've never shot at distance.
Yeah. Like, you go to GORC Selection and you say, gosh, you know, for 48 hours, they're going to do stuff to try to get you to quit. What are they going to do? I don't know. Let's go find out. Really, you need some fitness, but you don't need all the fitness. To ride a motorcycle over the mountain.
Super fit guys drop out of that, right?
Yeah. You know, it, but the willingness to say, you know what, shit goes wrong in life, so that's just life. Why would you not want to do something knowing that things could go wrong? And you know, the alternative is to say, like, sure, you know, stuff always goes wrong and we're going to find ways to fix it and keep going. Sick, you know, and that's where, you know, variety of skill sets comes in. And you say, what's the, you know, what's the mission? What's the plan here? You know, the plan is you have an objective goal, and it doesn't matter what the objective goal is. You do whatever it takes to reach that goal. And that requires stepping out of your comfort zone and just starting to do the types of things that force you to be like that. And you can't have somebody hold your hand, right? You can't say, well, I'm going to do 30 go-ruck tufts to prepare for selection. Like, no. I mean, you could do that to say, I have the fitness level, but you've got none of the other skills. And in fact, everybody else is doing the thinking for you. Like, that might hurt you more than help you. At some point, you know, you got to just go and put your mind on the goal. And to me, like, when I heard about the motorcycle thing, I heard about it like the week before they left or something like that. I thought, oh shit, like that is something that I would want to do. Or Stoney and I were talking about this Rambler race where you have to build a $500 car. And then you see, build a $500 car, and then it's like this off-road journey to try to reach the goal 500 miles away. How cool is that, right? Because you've got to use your brain, you've got to use your fitness, you've got to use all of your skill sets to accomplish that goal, you know? And, you know, it's not any
life outside your safe space.
Yeah, you know, and it's saying, gosh, you know, who would I want to be with if there was like 2, 3, 4, 5 people, and what are the skill sets that would be, you know, helpful to have? And if we don't have them, how fast can I develop these skill sets to be competent? And I know for sure, if I said, hey, Stoney, you know, next year we're going to do this thing, and it requires, you know, this list of skill sets that none of us have, we would go out and we would be an expert by the time that started at those skill sets. You know, just like everything else that everybody did. You know, Mark is an expert skydiver now. You know, Paige has gone, you know, batshit crazy with, you know, her work and being the best that she could be there. We've seen her at Endeavor, like all the skill sets that are required to do the things that you need, you just become an expert. And then you go apply them.
Yeah, I got to test all your new skill set, right?
Right. And the only way to test it is to just throw yourself into it head first.
100%.
You know, there's just to make a short story long, I think I've probably mentioned it before, but in the climbing world, there's a lot of like references that people love and they pull from outside of that. But there's this discus thrower in Salt Lake City. He's a coach, a famous coach, I'm sure other communities know about him, but anyway, this guy's famous because he coaches Olympic discus throwers, and his name's Dan John. And he's got a quote that I always kind of chant, is to keep the goal the goal. And one of the things that he uses to describe, you know, people coming to him to want to be Olympic discus throwers is they have certain physical benchmarks, like, you know, you need to deadlift X amount of pounds, whatever. You know, I don't know what it is. You know, all people that are good at being able to throw it they can all deadlift this amount. They can all squat this amount. They can all do these physical things. But at that point, once those benchmarks are reached, it's all skill. So he said that, you know, with athletes across the spectrum, it's very easy to pick a goal, pick a benchmark and say, okay, if deadlifting 350 pounds is the benchmark, then deadlifting 400 pounds must be better. And he says, that's not the goal, right? The goal is throwing a discus or climbing or something like that. And if the benchmarks are reached and maintained, that's all you have to do. All your extra energy needs to be put into whatever the skill or activity or the things that need to be checked off to reach that goal. And I see that with some people. They say, well, you know, I'm going to carry 50 pounds for 20 miles. You know, now I'm going to carry 90 pounds for 20 miles. And no, now I'm going to do 120 pounds for 10 miles. And they start to get physical injuries and so on. They kind of lose sight of the fact that you know, if you can consistently crush a standard of 50 pounds for 20 miles, there's probably a lot of other valuable things that you can work on, not just adding more weight and adding, you know, for the, to pull back to the Sniper Adventure Challenge, having spent the last 2 years becoming an expert rifle shooter, you know, I had a good idea of the benchmarks for shooting, you know, and Stoney and I both had a good idea of a pace and a weight to maintain a certain time. You know, if you're going to have success at certain things, obviously there are certain benchmarks, but time is not better spent, you know, doing, you know, 10 hours of curls to make my biceps balance out my quads or something like that. Than the 20 hours that might be better spent reading about code breaking or how to fix monkey bikes or how to, you know, makeshift weld something or so on and so forth. So I think that, to make a short story long, you keep the goal to goal and you set benchmarks to reach the goal. But once you reach those benchmarks, then, you know, more is not necessarily going to do you any better. Then what you need to do is work on another skill set, but that's not comfortable. And I think that's why there's so few people that are actually going out and doing this kind of stuff, is because they say, like, gosh, it's really easy for me to go to the gym and I can ruck 20 miles and I can bench press and I can squat and I can do all these physical standards. And so when you see a lineup at GURK Selection, you're like, wow, man, there's 100 really fit people. And you say, gosh, you know, they took that fitness way too far. And they didn't put the important training into the aspects that are really going to get them through the event. And they're holding your hand anyway. So it's like, not really the finishing, it's the preparation. And the preparation is different. And I think that, you know, all the people probably physically train, maybe even more than most of the people that have passed selection, you know, they probably knocked the physical training out of the park and they totally neglected the other things that are probably more important, which is the willingness to go out of your comfort zone and then be creative and try to do everything you can to accomplish the goal, keeping your eye on the goal instead of just, you know, I can squat 100 reps at my body weight, you know, something stupid like that.
The same thing. I mean, I see people quit selection. I've seen a lot of people quit selection and they're like, oh, I'm done. I can't do anymore. And then they get up and walk away. I'm like, dude, you just got up and walked away. You just climbed the hill. You were fine. So your head let you down.
Right.
They didn't train the mental part of it, you know?
Yeah. Dude, there was a movie with, it's an old movie, but you know, I'll be 45 in a week or something. So with Ethan Hawke, you know, with like the genetically engineered people. Remember that movie?
Nope.
Oh, well, so like he was, so Ethan Hawke's like this regular dude, but his brother was genetically modified. So he was like, you know, super strong, super fast, super endurance, you know, and his, obviously like his brother kicked his ass at all sorts of stuff. Right. But, and they always did the swimming race anyway, but it makes me think of that because he decides like, you know, how am I going to beat my brother who's physically superior to me? So then he just decided to swim out. Like they're like, all right, let's go swim. Knowing that as far out as you swim, that's only halfway. And he just made up in his mind, I'm just going to swim until I die.
Jesus.
Knowing that the first brother to turn around is the loser. Mm-hmm. So he just set up in his mind, like, I'm just not going to turn around no matter what. And, you know, that allowed the other brother to swim till he was completely exhausted because he's thinking about, shit, I got to turn around. Shit, I got to turn around. Shit, I got to turn around at some point and make it back. Whereas he just stopped thinking about it. And he's like, fuck it. I'm just swimming until you turn around. I don't even give a shit about coming back. And, you know, I mean, that could be taken a little bit too, you know, out of context, but I think that willingness to just say, like, you're either dragging me off of this event or we're finishing it.
Yeah.
That's a lot different than like, you know, oh, my legs are burning and I'm tired and I'm hungry. And, you know, maybe it's time to call it because, you know, I'm really cold. And
yeah, for sure. They didn't burn those bridges properly. We still got some mental attachment to the other side. You gotta go all in.
Right. You know, to say like, well, if the goal is to go until, you know, whatever, then that's kind of the goal. It's not saying I'm going to go until, well, I get uncomfortable.
Yeah. I've seen people get through the welcome party and quit. They're like, no, I'm done. I just want to see if I can make it. And they're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Keep going.
But right.
Keeps going. Everybody's there for a different reason, I guess.
Yeah. See, and that's exactly why, you know, it's like, okay, who's going to be my partner? You know, it has to be somebody who's proven themselves in that context. And there's plenty of people that say, like, well, I could have done it, or I want to do it, or I could have, should have done it. And that could be true, but I like to say, well, I know, you know, we'll be good partners simply because I know you're willing to put your, you know, mind on a goal and do whatever it takes, you know. And what, and shit, I mean, you never know. They could have had us fix monkey bikes. Like, you just never know, right? And that's the cool thing is that, you know, in life, you don't know what's coming. So having a really good, strong, generalized skill set that you reach certain benchmarks, you identify your weakness. Dan Plants is a guy I look up to and respect a lot. And at one point in the last, you know, 10 years or however long I've known him, he did point out that I didn't have the shooting skill set. And, you know, not that, you know, I'm going to just do skill sets that people tell me I don't have, because there's plenty I don't have. But it's like, okay, you know, and it did resonate. And at some point after that, it became important. And he said, okay, I'm going to be an expert at this. And whatever the next goal is, I don't know, but that's pretty cool. You know, I know Mark and both Marks, selection Marks, have become expert free fall skydivers. Mm-hmm. I know Eric Kling's taken the drive, focus, and dedication to become a firefighter. And I'm pretty sure everybody's been, they just add things to their, I want to be an expert at it list, and they become experts at them.
Even Mark Clem, right? Super awesome jiu-jitsu guy.
Yeah.
An MMA guy, right?
Yeah, he's an accomplished Muay Thai fighter.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
I just think it's interesting, you know, when selection comes around, like that's the big thing that's on everyone's mind is selection and then finishing selection and, you know, it's completed and you did it. It's interesting to me because the, you know, historically the people we've seen finish selection, that's not, you know, the pinnacle event to them. That's just another event along the way in the process of, you know, going out, becoming an expert in something, trying something new. And it's just it's an interesting mindset.
Mm-hmm.
It might be the goal. I mean, I can't speak for everybody else, but I do know that, you know, there's a number of folks that have really dedicated time to passing and then they passed. And in that window of time,
right,
they were definitely focused on.
Yeah, that's
I
the
want
goal of the time. Absolutely.
Yeah, but it's not like they passed and then they just, you know, sat down and said, "I did it. I've accomplished my life goal."
Right. No, because you invest your. I mean, everybody in the Garak world has invested a ton of emotional energy into the community, pretty much, if they're still around. And that emotional energy is powerful, you know. But I don't think anybody's just done that and then stopped. And certainly some of the folks, like, you know, they got serious jobs and so on. But I know Tim Irwin, he's probably done four or five things to expert level since then. And I think, you know, when you first pass selection, there's that kind of honeymoon, like 6 to 9 months where you do bazillions of events and you're, you know, Captain Goruck for a while and then you kind of fizzle off and realize like, okay, you know, you got to kind of stop holding hands and start just applying yourself and raising that bar of standards across whatever it is that interests you. And that's what's cool. Like Tim got into competitive swimming and then he got into competitive rowing and then he got into jiu-jitsu and, you know, the whole while he became a physician and, you know, went through his residency or whatever. And then, you know, I mean, it's like, fuck, you know, Spencer Gwynn was a successful orthopedic surgeon that started Stop the Bleeding Foundation and is now, you know, those goals I think are equally as challenging to say, gosh, how do we outfit people who are in the line of fire or running into casualties that could be preventable with immediate trauma care and outfitting those people with affordable tourniquets and training for those life threats that happen in the first, you know, hour of being shot or stabbed or blown up or wounded. And so equally as impressive as taking your skill sets, your dedication, your ability to say, all right, I'm going to chamber this objective and create this program that helps other people. Like, shit, man, it's really freaking awesome. Not that there aren't other people that are freaking awesome, but the selection finisher group has some people that have done some really, really incredible things. Because, you know, you take that focus and dedication and apply it towards the next goal.
Absolutely. And it's been, like you said, just awesome to see. And so if I can just bring it back real quick, you know, talking about focus and dedication towards a goal, the goal for this year, 2019 Sniper Adventure Challenge. I mean, Chris, you took third place, then you took second place. You know, the goal, I'm guessing, was, you know, it's always first place. Going in with a teammate who had 2 weeks notice, I mean, that's not ideal circumstances for a giant, I mean, I guess not a giant competition. There are 33 teams, but it's, I'm guessing that it's not 33 amateur teams. These are people who know what's going on. They know what they're signing up for. And it's a
super intimidating teams. Yeah.
Yeah. 33 intimidating, challenging teams that are going to sign up for this. So, I mean, you get out there for the event, obviously you took first place. Was there a moment during the event where you knew you were going to end up in first, or was this one of those things where you show up at the end and then no one knows, they total everything and it's a surprise?
I don't think we knew till they called second place.
You knew you were top two, and so when they called second, you knew you had won?
I thought we were top five.
Which you were.
I'll tell you a moment that I thought that I blew it. And this is a big one because I had the radio on my chest rig. So at any time during the adventure, they would give out radio calls with a code on it. Whether it would be like Blueberry Pie or Eiffel Tower. And I heard it all sort of right down the time, but whatever. So I had three radio codes come through and I wrote them all down. At the end of the event, we submitted our scorecards. I didn't submit the radio codes. And I thought, at that moment, I had blown it for us. I didn't think we were making top five. Because I could see our points on the wall, but then there was a column for radio checks, and it said zero. I'm like, oh my God. I just ruined the whole thing because I wasn't paying attention to details at that last moment. But we were pretty tired after the 36 hours, and I didn't even think about dropping the radio codes into the score box at the time. So fortunately,
I guess that answers the question. I've got the scorecard up here and it's got, you know, second place, third place, fourth, fifth, all have three codes. And then your first place has zero codes.
Right.
So I guess that answers the question for what the codes column's for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty serious at that moment.
You have all sorts of little things that you have to do and rules and missions that you need to complete for points, and so you kind of have the points are laid out, but you're not exactly sure how. They have a formula to throw it into, but it's this giant geometric algebraic formula, and nobody really plugged the numbers into that to see beforehand. You know, it's like, fuck, you know, these people, you know, I mean, it really wasn't it was very, very close. And it always is, but you know, not I don't want to, like, you know, beat our chests and so on and so forth. But you did speak to the, you know, the teams that show up. There were some GoRuck teams that came for the first time, and so there's cool. Definitely people who show up that have never done anything like it before. And every year I've seen people that I've known from not every year, for the last 2 years or the last three times, there's been teams that have come from the GO or GRTs that show up. And some of them do very well, but at least half the teams have, you know, specific strong backgrounds. You know, there's usually Ranger Battalion, SF teams. And then this time, actually the last three times, teams from different tier one units and government agencies. So there's people that know what they're doing out there. But that, again, like, I don't think that should intimidate anybody. I think that should be validation that it's a worthwhile event, you know, because I don't think anybody should be intimidated by going toe to toe with the very best. You know, when somebody when I started shooting, my primary goal was to get with tier one, tier two shooters and shoot with them. And right, they're who you want to learn from and measure yourself with, or professional shooters that are competing in, you know, the professional shooting world. You know, or there were scout snipers there, Marine. There's some Razorbacks, and right, those are the people that if you go to a shooting field shooting contest, if they're not there, you know, how do you measure where you need to grow? Right.
Right.
So, you know, if I want to get good at running a 5K, I'm going to try to find people that are running 5K and, you know,
keep with them
sub 16 minutes. Right.
Right. It's the difference between doing a 5K in, you know, your local town where the first place time's 19 minutes versus driving into the city and doing one where someone's putting up a 16 or even a high 15 or something.
Right. I mean, when I was teaching navigators and running those kind of events, and people would say, like, gosh, you know, they create this mystique, this barrier. And I remember in college, like, you know, although I studied mostly science, I did study philosophy, and I didn't really resonate with some of the kind of more pop culture stuff. And you remember, like, Nietzsche, the God is dead kind of concept. And I really thought, like, gosh, like, what is that? You know, that you create these idols and you create these things that you put way up on a pedestal, and that holds you down. And until you're able to, you know, I'm not trying to be anti-religious or something like that, but it's a famous quote that people hear. And, you know, my understanding anyway was that, you know, you create these things like, oh my gosh, this person is special forces. They're going to kick my ass and do some crazy ninja shit. And there's no way I could compete against them. And if you really think that's a shitty way to go through life, I think. Or, oh, they're a professional surfer. I'm not going to go surfing with them because they're going to kick my ass. Or this person's a professional chef. I don't want to cook them dinner. Fuck that. Like, those are the people that you want to go up against, right? If I wanted to fight Muay Thai stuff, I'd get in the selection group and I would say, like, hey, you know, I want to fight Muay Thai. And I think that I know who I want to, you know, go up against. Or,
have you asked me to see you back?
Yeah. But the truth is, like, you cannot let anything intimidate you. And in fact, if things do intimidate you, that's often a really good sign that's the thing that you need to charge at. And with climbing, you know, I've always used that as I haven't climbed as much the last few years, but I've always used that as a goal. Like, if I find a route that looks beautiful, but I'm intimidated by it, that's my project. You know, for whatever reason, you know, something could scare you because you might get hurt, or, you know, it has something about it that's scary. And I think that type of fear, obviously there's self-preservation fear that's important. But the type of fear that intimidates you is the type of fear that you need to fight on a daily basis, because that's kind of what's holding you back from personal growth.
Love it.
Yeah. Love it. And so I've got one final question here that I want to make sure that we hit. So I'm going to ask it now, if that's all right. It's going to go to each of you individually. So I'll start with Stony first. So you were drawn into this event 2 weeks before it started. You've never shot anything at greater distance than 250 yards. How did it feel to come away with first place?
This is the first time I've won anything that had such a huge, awesome prize table. So I was pretty stoked with that. It was very overwhelming. It was like Chris said, you know, I'm looking at these other teams going, oh my God, like what gave us the edge over these guys? I don't know. We really sat down that night prior to the event at dinner, just reading the rules. I wrote them aloud and we had them with us the whole time and we read them, even when they're punching our cards. It said, you know, bring the punch down on the right-hand side, punch across into the box. So we're like, buy the book. I don't know if any teams lost any points for punching them upside down or not, but we made sure we had all aspects covered. So we did win. I was super stoked. Like, it came down to the points, like, you know, very close in the points, but I was pretty stoked to have been a part of it. Not being able to train at that level that Chris does on the day-to-day, you know, but to be able to pull that off. And I'm very thankful for Chris for showing me everything I need to know the day before going into it. You know, without that level of coaching, without that skills that Chris had, there's no way that we would have placed as high as we did, you know. But yeah, I was super stoked.
That's awesome. And then I guess, you know, hopping over to you, Chris, this is your third year here. You hit third place the first year, second place, second year. This year you went in with a new partner who you had asked 2 weeks in advance. So someone you hadn't trained with a ton. How did it feel to come out on first?
It was amazing. Obviously, you know, proud of what we accomplished, kind of, you know, realizing the extent to what we had just gone through, right? It's a little traumatic, I suppose, like, maybe that's dramatic to say, but, you know, it is a little bit of emotional trauma, physical trauma, some confusion, you know, there's points that you reach, you know. I trained completely different because I've been shooting this year, competing in a different, you know, in long range precision rifle. And I put so much emphasis on my marksmanship, that coming into it a little bit less physically trained up, you just never know, what you're going to face. You know, I had been watching a few of my friends that were training who were there, you know, do some pretty crazy physical training plans, pretty impressive ones, and knowing shit, you know, I'm not doing that, but I'm focusing on, you know, a skill set that we're going to need, that will be important. And then to be able to fall back on that skill set of being able to do very hard physical kind of gut check type events. Like, and it was cool to do it with Stoney. I had always wanted to do an event with Stoney. So, you know, I always think, you know, everybody that I spend time connected to, I think, gosh, what would I want to do with them? What would I want to do with them? And I'd always wanted to do an event with Stoney. Stoney does a lot with his wife, and I've done a lot of events with my wife. So it's hard to be like, hey, you know, Sarah's awesome. So it makes sense. Like, he would want to do stuff with her. I was a little bit like, shit, well, how do I ask him? Like, all right, I'm just gonna ask, like, you know, let's do this. But, you know, part of me was like, gosh, like, what if he just says, you know, hey, I'm gonna do that with Sarah, thanks for showing me, you know. And I'd be like, well, that would be really cool. Like, they would have done well. So I was just grateful that Stoney came down, and you know, I made a lot of, you know, I was trying to describe to him, like, all right, we're gonna do this and this, just hoping that, like, gosh, I hope, like, I didn't ruin. I get competitive in events and stuff like that, you know. So I just kept, you know, I was just grateful that he came and put up with me, and he was, I mean, he picked everything up extremely fast. We spent the whole day prior to the event out in the Wyoming desert shooting and playing around and having fun. And, you know, a lot of people would want to be resting, and we were out there, like, taking our shoes off and shooting pistols and making up fun games, you know,
yeah,
like, just having fun. And I think that, you know, knowing that physically you have that benchmark, right? It's just like that Dan John thing, like, you got to keep the goal. It's easy to get suckered into thinking I need more of X, Y, Z, when in fact, like, if you've got a baseline, you know, the benchmark, working on the other things. And then once you've got all of that, you can relax a little bit and have fun. And
yeah,
you know, we had a lot of fun the day before. We got a okay night's sleep. We ate some food. We rolled in. We kind of took a deep breath. And it was just, it was cool. But, you know, I think I would have been any top, like, top three, but it definitely feels good to win it. You know, and then just thinking about more events, you know, like, where were my shortcomings and how do I fill that in this next year?
Do either of you have an event already on the horizon, a next event? I mean, it doesn't have to be in shooting, but just something that you're planning for?
Yeah, I do. I'm heading down to
the tactical games in Florida, early October. First time down in the tactical games, I came fourth in Masters. So I'm dying to get back there. I want to get a third, like at least bring home a big piece of steel trophy, right? So that's my goal right now.
Very cool.
Yeah, there. I think right around that same time frame, I've got another team field shooting match in New Mexico called the Team Safari. It's in cool. New Mexico, and it's a big three-day shooting match, and it's another one of my goals. And then I'm going to try a tactical games in April.
That's awesome.
And then just try to rock climb a little bit over the winter.
Well, good luck to both of you in your upcoming endeavors.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the All Day Rock Off podcast. This has been episode number 122. You can find links to everything we talked about in the show notes at alldayruckoff.com/122. I really hope that you enjoyed the call between Stoney and Chris. I had a lot of fun talking with them, and I think that they just had a lot of amazing information that's really relevant for GoRuck events, for training for ruck events, and for team-based events. If you enjoyed this interview and you want to support the podcast, there's a couple ways you can do that. You can leave reviews either on Apple Podcasts or on our Facebook page. Just search for All Day Ruck Off. You can also pick stuff up in the All Day Ruck Off online store, alldayruckoff.com/store. Or you can support through Patreon, patreon.com/alldayruckoff, which includes some additional bonus content. I want to take a second to give a huge thank you to Jill for supporting through Patreon. Jill, I really, really appreciate it. And I just want you to know that. Again, thank you for downloading this episode. Thank you for listening. And as always, don't forget, attitude is everything. Keep yours positive and drink hard, rock harder.